Oh man, did you hear about Brody Stevens?
What do I know that name?
He's a
Brody
comedian.
Stevens.
He killed himself. It's super
Yeah.
epically sad today.
I guess I didn't. Was he an LA guy
He
or?
was. He's like super interesting. He's like the he was like the best warm-up guy.
Brody Stevens.
Steven Brody Stevens.
Was this a
Yeah.
guy that you met?
I didn't meet him. I didn't meet Steven Brody Stevens. But like everyone I knew met him. Like today, like my Facebook was really awash with people and photographs of them and Brody. It's like he was at every, you would see him, he was a fixture of the community and he was the best at warming up the audience. So he worked for Chelsea Handler for a long time. So like if you went to Chelsea Handler, Brody Stevens would be the comedian who like told jokes and got
Yeah.
everybody together and got them to bring positive energy. He's super funny. He's like, the thing is his jokes aren't funny, but then he gets mad at the audience, and then that is super funny. Just you were just talking about like, does everything have to be meta? And the thing is, unfortunately, Brody Stevens was this hilarious meta comic, so he'd just be like, I'm out here doing my best, bringing positive energy, giving it to you, and you, arms crossed, bad body language, negative behavior.
Did people come to expect that he
Oh
would
yeah,
tell?
that was like
Did
his
he
thing.
intentionally tell?
It was this beautiful performance art, you know? He'd be like, I'm doing fine. I have a car. It's a 1996 Toyota Avalon, leather exterior.
Leather exterior.
And then, which I think is funny, but then people wouldn't laugh and he'd be like, come on, I've been in movies, Hangover 1, Hangover 2, Due Date, Last Comic Standing. But there was no, you just, he was honest. That's the thing about him is he was being honest. And so the things he would say when he would be like, when do I get the big money? When do I get to be on a TV show? Like, you should never say that to an audience. But the comedians think that's super funny because that's what they're all thinking. You know? Like, he says what comedians are thinking. And he did what, like, I thought was interesting where he, like, he just, he was very, he's a special guy. And it's really sad. It's profoundly sad.
Do you know the deeper story behind the
Oh,
circumstances of his death
yeah.
or?
I don't know the circumstances of his death, but I mean, he would shout off the medications that he was on. He was clearly manic. You know, everyone kind of tried to manage his manic episodes. But I was very influenced by Brody Stevens. He had a show called Brody Stevens Enjoy It.
You talk about a podcast
No, he
or
had a like a Comedy Central show. But it was just one season.
Brody
Just one season.
Stevens.
He was like too niche. I'm very sad about Brody Stevens right now. Like anyone who ever did comedy in LA was. And though I'm going to keep my positive energy going just like he would do. And I, Patrick, maybe I should be a warm-up comic. This is what I was thinking. I'm like, this is a perfect job for me. Like, I don't want to be, I don't need to be the guy telling the jokes, but I can be the guy out there before the comedians come out. You know, it's just funny, Patrick. Like, Brody Stevens makes you, he makes me start talking like Brody Stevens, where I'm like, I could do it. Positive energy. You know, he'd always be like, look how flexible I am. I work out. I have a trampoline. I stay focused. You know, and I mean, that's the thing. Anyways, like really awesome and meta dude. And so about the podcast, if you are into supporting the podcast, follow me on Instagram would be a cool move to make. And I'm doing some photo work, some visual work. Like the very beginnings of my visual work are starting to happen on Instagram. And so, you know, I'm just saying, if you want to be supportive, keep the energy positive. You know, you can follow me on Instagram. And, and if you want to ask me any questions for any reason, you can do that on Facebook. Like, ask me a question and I will answer it on the podcast, you know. So that would be cool. And and then the other thing I was thinking about, like, I wasn't sure that Patrick and I were going to record this weekend, but then Patrick brought it up, which I like because I don't want to feel like I'm always pushing it, but like, it's cold as fuck right now. I mean, it's not super cold today. It's like 31 degrees, but there's snow everywhere. And there's not a lot that you can do. Like, doing a podcast is like a pretty good thing to do because we don't have a lot of options because there's piles of snow that are like 5 feet tall. And I've been thinking a lot about if I am a nerd or not. Like, am I a nerd? Am I a comedian? I never want to, like, say that I'm a thing because I feel like some kind of panel of nerds would have to, like, tell me that I'm a nerd and give me some kind of, like, nerd certification. Because I, like, never know if I'm a nerd or not. I mean, I think I am, or, like, I'm a fan of nerds. Anyways, I think that also Patrick and I podcast because we're nerds is what I'm saying. And I was thinking about some of the nerdy things that Patrick and I have done. And I think the nerdiest thing that we've done is when we, Patrick drove to Iowa and brought eclipse glasses. Then we drove to a part of Iowa to see the eclipse and then took a tour of historic Iowa sites and had quite an enjoyable day doing so. And we saw, American Gothic, right? We saw American Gothic. You know, it's the painting of the farmer and his wife, or the wife and her farmer. And so, you know, we're nerds. You kind of want to be a nerd, like, because we are into doing, you know, it's just, you want to be into what you're doing. We're podcast nerds. That's why we do a podcast. And I've been thinking about, like, I used some people's real names in the last podcast that I recorded. It also hasn't been posted yet. That's weird, but it's going to post it. And as soon as I listen to, it's going to post it. And by it, I mean me. It posts the podcast on the website. So I talk about people that I know, and I've got a system for who I'll talk about and who I won't talk about. Like, I have different standards, you know. Like, if I'm in a relationship with someone, like a romantic relationship, then I probably won't talk about that much at all, you know. That's like a real pact, a romantic relationship. Or like, if I'm working with someone, like, I don't generally talk about, if they pay me, especially, like, if somebody pays me money, like, then I probably won't talk about what happens in that situation. There's, like, different degrees. And if someone's my friend, there's some things I won't talk about. And there's, you know, but I don't know. I'm very clear when I meet people that I'm a journalist. I used to be a journalist, that I'm a storyteller. I always tell people that I'm a storyteller. And I'm trying to be honorable about it, represent people correctly, and show both sides of who that person is, and, you know, be self-deprecating of myself whenever possible. But I mean, I feel like I earned the right to tell this story, or that everyone has a right to tell their story as they see it, you know. I mean, I think that that's what I'm trying to do. However, if you are listening to this podcast and I talk about you and you were like, fuck you, Dave Good, I don't like what you said about me, right? You can come and be on the podcast, or you can tell me what your issue is with what I said, and I will respond to that. I will apologize if I said it wrong. I will add your perspective to the story, you know, that, you know, if you get mad about how I say something, because I am speaking extemporaneously and I don't totally agree with everything I say every single podcast myself, you know? So, anyways, but that's my strategy, because I have thought a lot about this next part of the story and who am I going to say this certain person was there? Am I going to talk about this certain person? There's been a lot of thought that went into that, today. And the other thing is that I'm talking about people in the world of comedy, and that's like mental illness is a part of this, or mental illness is a big part of LA. Mental illness is a real thing, right? Like, I am supportive of mental illness is real, right? And when someone is being medicated or seeing a therapist, it's a chemical thing. There are chemical problems going on. Maybe there was a traumatic brain injury. Patrick and I were just talking about traumatic brain injuries, and traumatic brain injuries are going to come up. And when you're talking about famous, you know, Hollywood, traumatic brain injuries are going to be a part of it. Mental illness is going to be a part of it, you know? And so mental illness is real. I'll be talking, you know, so I might mention that someone that I know deals with mental illness on some level. And I also have dealt with my own mental illness, you know, I quote unquote have attention deficit disorder. That's quote unquote caused some quote unquote problems, quote unquote, in my life, you know? So anyways, but you know, I'm supportive of that. And if you have issues with mental illness and thinking if they're real, yeah, you talk to me about that and I'll fucking set you straight, you know? So anyways, and the thing is, I do think that just being around performers, musicians, producers, you know, that there's just people have a lot on their plate, you know, that you don't get into this, in my opinion, if you aren't kind of, if there isn't a lot on your plate mentally, emotionally, to begin with. I mean, that's kind of like what causes a person to be a performer. And I don't know if you ever watched that show, Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee. Patrick, you seen that?
Once or twice.
Yeah. So, right. So, one episode, Jerry Seinfeld's like, don't give me this comedians are damaged people bullshit. You know, he's like, the average bread truck driver is damaged. You know, I don't believe. He doesn't believe what I believe, right? And that my mentor believes is that the art world is the land of broken toys. You know, it's like you are, you know, you're a unicorn with a broken horn. That's what causes you to become a, like, you know, a whatever, a successful guitar player. And so then I was watching a Seinfeld interview. Do you know that he was raised by orphans, Patrick?
No, Jerry?
Both of Jerry Seinfeld's parents are orphans. And he brought this up and someone was like, oh my God, you know? Because that's such a significant thing, right? And he was like, hey, you know, I learned self-reliance from them, you know, but he kind of casually mentioned, like, I mean, who's going to know less about how to be a parent than two orphans, you know? Like, it's very interesting. And to me, one could tell the story how someone who was raised by parents who were maybe distant and didn't have a strong understanding of intimacy because they were raised by institutions instead of people, how that person could then end up getting on stage and telling jokes and, you know. So, anyways, those are my observations. And, but, you know, the story's getting good. So, if you recall where we left off, I was outside of the improv and George Carlin's daughter, Kelly, had invited Mike and I to a party at her house. Okay, and so we did this, of course, this happens, and then we go back inside the improv and sit at this table, you know, and it's like, it's like incredible, you know. There's Mike's agent, who was the agent for like who's that woman who was in all the Mel Brooks? Madeline Kahn. Madeline Kahn's agent, you know, and like everybody's telling these old time Hollywood stories, you know, and also the guy who wrote Transformers is there, right? And the thing is about the guy who wrote Transformers, because he's, you know, is that what he doesn't understand is I've already cast my lot with the art world, right? Like, we all want to be a part of something, and I've chosen to be a part of the art world. And so really, when I'm not gushing over Transformers or like taking a stand and refusing to say that I think Transformers is good, it's, I'm expressing my loyalty to the art world. You know, he doesn't know that. He thinks I'm trying to become loyal to the whatever world, but he's there, and he's there with Riker from Star Trek, from Star Trek The Next Generation, right? And he is introducing everyone to Riker, and they're all super excited, and he gets to me in the table, and he just skips over me and goes like on to the next person, you know? But I'm like, I don't care, because I'm fucking sitting at the table at the improv listening to stories about comedy, you know, and I just got to listen, you know. I mean, I view myself as a storyteller, but I'm not going to start telling stories to Madeline Kahn's agent, you know, and Uncle Mike and stuff like that. And so, you know, and it's like I'm walking on this like sacred ground of comedy, and I'm about ready to go to one of the most sacred places that you can go, you know, to Kelly Carlin's house. And I'm like thinking about this, and I'm excited, right? Because I'm like, I'm going to go with Uncle Mike. I'm going to be this guy's friend who just killed at the improv, you know, and I'm going to be there by myself, and I'm just going to be free to like network and meet people and operate. And it's going to be this incredible thing. And I'm going to work my way into a job in comedy, right? I'm like, this is my shot. And I am going to be an excellent party guest and be totally not the guy trying to get a job, but secretly, you know, but I'm going to pull it off, right? And right away, my plans don't go as I think they're going to go, because Uncle Mike is so nice that he invites the like entire ragtag band of Davetown people to come to this party with him, you know, like. And so I'm thinking that I'm going to just be like one guy, but instead now I'm coming with this house of, you know, failures with mental illness, you know. I mean, Davetown, that's like what we all, it's what we all are. I mean, not really, but like that's what, you know, now I'm showing up with this like ragtag group rather than just myself, which is a totally different, I don't know, it's just a different ball of wax, you know, from like a networking perspective. And I mean, have I talked, Patrick, about the secret to networking?
I don't recall.
The secret to networking is to not network, right? You go to places where networking is going on, but then you just are yourself and you have a good time, you know? You can't, you know, you don't want to be in there like glad handing and trying to make things happen. You just kind of go with the understanding that sometimes you meet people and things do happen, you know? So like I was just in, you know, I mean, I would say we're more friends than a professional relationship now, but someone who used to be a primarily professional relationship. And people ask me what I'm up to, I tell them I'm working on a podcast, you know, because that's literally what I'm up to, you know? I'm not like trying to work that into the conversation. I'll talk to somebody about whatever, you know, I'll talk to somebody about basketball the entire time. I'm not going to be like, oh, hey, enough about Michael Jordan. I got to talk to you about this podcast. You know, I just like let things happen. I trust, you know, I trust. Patrick and I share, well, Patrick really doesn't believe in free will. I kind of don't, or, you know, saying I'm going on the ride. So I'm excited. And I'm going to a Hollywood party with Uncle Mike, right? Before I go into Kelly Collins' party, I need to give like a brief history of me in comedy, which is that I was obsessed with stand-up comedy from the moment that it came on television. You know, when Comedy Central came out, when they had stand-up spotlight, these shows hosted by, you know, Rosie O'Donnell and Louis Anderson. I mean, I was riveted. My friends used to make fun of me for the TV always being on Comedy Central. Like, they'd come home and they'd turn on and it'd always be on Comedy Central, you know. And I listened to comedy CDs and, you know, I am a nerd in this sense. And I was a huge comedy nerd before any of this had ever happened. And I mean, and I went to LA with the intention of being open, you know. But so for me to be going to, you know, the home of George Carlin's daughter is, it's a mystical experience, you know. It's a big deal. It's a big deal. And so I'm coming into the house and like, I'm just trying to keep blinders on because I don't want to see any pictures of like her and George Carlin in like just a regular photo, because that's going to melt my brain, right? Like, that's just going to melt my brain if it like becomes like too real that like George Carlin frequented this like place, you know. I don't want to see that. So I just like keep blinders on, but I'm, you know, I've got the wherewithal to keep my shit together at an intense party, you know. I'm just like meeting people. I think I brought some booze with me. You know, you never want to show up empty-handed. And, you know, and I'm just like making my way into the party, you know. And so I get my drink and I'm there, and there is a, and I mean, the thing about this party, right? And like, now I know I'm just, I've walked right into this sweet spot, you know, like Kelly Carlin is a very nice person. This has got a very homey feel to it. And going to a homey Hollywood party is like an unheard of thing, but like I'm at one, you know? And I go outside and there's like a yard area and I see, I'm getting the lay of the land, you know? And like I said, I can't, I just have to be very much in the background, you know? Cause I'm with this large group of people, you know, some, we clearly are wearing less expensive clothes and we're just like a little bit more, you know, it's not quite Oliver Twist, but it's got a little like, hello, Kelly, we're at the party, you know, like, so, anyways, and I'm just trying to feel my way. I see that there's like a fire pit area, you know, and then there's like a table, and at this table is like a group of people talking, and like the energy around this group of people talking was like something that I had not felt before. Like, I felt like it was like people playing poker for like $20 million, you know, like it had that kind of energy. And I was like, okay, I'm just gonna not even worry about who's sitting at that table, right? And I'm gonna go to this like other group of people, right? And then I'm there and there's this woman, and she is talking about her mother, right? And she's like, oh my god, my mom has had so much to drink, you know, and like I'm just trying to like keep her on the rails and I don't want her to do anything crazy, you know. And I'm like, oh man, I kind of know what you're saying. Like, my mom's kind of crazy, like my whole family's like a little crazy. I get what you're saying, you know. And she's like, yeah, whatever, you know, like dismissive. And then she keeps talking, you know, and she continues to talk about this woman, and god, it just sounds a lot like my mom, you know. It just sounds a lot like my mom. And I'm like, seriously, I really feel like you are talking about my mom right now, you know. And she's like, look, I know what you're doing, you know. And I'm like, what? She's like, I know you're trying to like identify with me, I get it, you know. And I was like, no, I don't know. And she's like, you don't know? And I'm like, no, I don't know. And she's like, my mom is Roseanne. And I turn and there is like a wasted Roseanne like sitting at that table, right? And I like turn like right away, because this is Roseanne before the fall, you know. Like, I need to make this clear, like Roseanne has now had a very a profound fall from grace, and this was like a precursor, because here I am like next to her daughter who's like already kind of white knuckling her mom and her mom's behavior, you know. And I just don't want anyone, I wasn't sure if I was going to bring this up, because it's so funny. I mean, just someone like looking at me being like, dude, my mom is Roseanne. And Roseanne is a huge deal in Iowa, right? Like, that's the thing. Like, I mentioned earlier that when Patrick and I were seeing the sights of Iowa and went to see American Gothic. There's like a museum. We didn't see American Gothic, the painting. We saw the house, right? The classic house that the painting was painted in front of. The painting itself, I believe, is in Chicago Art Institute, somewhere. It's not there. We saw the house that it was painted. We went inside, and there's replications of the various American Gothic, like, comments, you know, like people doing different characters. And, like, right in the middle is Tom Arnold and Roseanne Barr in the American Gothic pose. Like, I'm from Iowa. Tom Arnold's from Iowa. Roseanne, megastar Roseanne, who had one of the most successful television shows of all time about working class people, live there, you know? So I'm just saying, for me, I'm seeing about as famous of a person as I can see. And in terms of Roseanne's, like, subsequent behavior, Roseanne is someone with a traumatic brain injury. She's got real mental health issues that hadn't yet spiraled out of control, but now have, you know? But I have to say, like, she was a force of nature at that $1 million poker table. Like, I realize now why the energy was so intense. So I was like, okay, well, I'm just going to now exit and go to the fire pit, right? And again, Kelly Carlin, amazing host, had, like, there was, like, a pre-made, like, kindling and log fire, and then, like, a match, like, next to it, like, out of the thing. Like, it was so beautifully indicated, like, if you want to, you, person, can start this fire. Like, it has been built completely. There's a match. There's a match ready to go. You don't have to wait for me to start the fire. And you know me, I'm a fire setter. So I start the fire and I just hang out by the fire, right? This is what I'm saying about, like, networking. I wasn't like, hey, everyone, I am Dave. You know, blah, blah, blah. Like, I'm just having a chill time because it's a party. You know, it's a party. And I proceed to party, you know? I drink a lot. I sit by this fire. And anyways, I'm hanging by this fire, having a good time. It's so weird. At one point, none of the only Marine Dave of the Davetown Daves came to the party. Like, Juggler Dave was gone. And I know I'm calling them Marine Dave and Juggler Dave. They both have a lot more going on in their lives than just that. Juggler Dave is currently a musician. Marine Dave is currently a comedian. So, you know, people change. And also, they're more than just their job or the nickname that I give them to tell them apart from me, failed producer Dave. And so anyways, I'm hanging out. There's four Daves hanging out around the fire. But one of them is not Dave from the Marines, you know. I'm talking to these Daves. And two of the Daves are dating. It's a real Dave fest. And I'm beginning to wonder where Dave from the Marines is, you know. And I'm getting a little worried. Because even though this is a very kind Hollywood party, Hollywood parties can get a little intense, you know? People can become confused. They can get their feelings hurt. You know, things can go wrong. And just as I'm, like, beginning to worry, like, the door busts open and Dave walks out with Paul Provenza, right? And Patrick, do you know who Paul Provenza is?
I do.
Yeah, right? He directed The Aristocrats, right? How do you know Paul Provenza?
I know the name.
Yeah, right. So he comes out with Paul Provenza. Paul Provenza, Oscar-winning director, Paul Provenza. He won for Best Documentary, The Aristocrats, right? So he walks out with Dave. He's having, like, the best time with the authenticity of Dave. And he comes over to the fire. And those of us at the fire, we're talking about Werner Herzog, right? We're talking about Werner Herzog. I'm very passionate about Werner Herzog. I have a lot to say. You know, that's the thing. Like, I've just been here hanging out by this fire, but now a subject has come up, Werner Herzog, that I know a lot about. And we're talking about our favorite Werner Herzog movies. And I'm saying that my favorite Werner Herzog movie is Fitzcarraldo, right? And Fitzcarraldo, for those of you who hasn't seen it, is about this crazy visionary who is, like, in the jungle trying to make his dream come true. And I identify very much with Fitzcarraldo, and then Paul Provenza sits down and he's like, oh, are you talking about Fitzcarraldo? I love that movie. And then, like, I see it all play out in my head. Like, I'm gonna talk to Paul Provenza about Fitzcarraldo and how I identify with the power of its vision. And it's real, face to face. I'm very convincing, and I'm going to convince this guy that I am brilliant and capable of many things, and the world of comedy is going to spread open to me. And just as I'm about ready to respond, Uncle Mike like comes into the frame and he's like, did I tell you I did 50 minutes, right? 50 minutes. And Paul Provenza's like, oh my God, we got to talk about, and the two of them walk away, right? And the thing is, I was not mad. I mean, I was profoundly disappointed, but the whole reason I was at that party was because of Uncle Mike, right? I'm not at that party without Uncle Mike. And Uncle Mike, by doing 50 minutes at the Improv and killing, earned the right, deserved to talk to his, I'm sure, longtime friend, Paul Provenza, about the magic of his time in Los Angeles, right? And so then I just continued to get drunker. And I mean, I don't know. Have you ever been like really drunk and really high around a fire with a group of strangers and started to enjoy it? You know, like it's just like so great because everyone's on their best behavior. But now you're so fucked up that you have no choice but to be yourself. And this other guy who I think was a Dave, like I've been having some pleasant conversations with this other Dave, you know? And someone else finally asked Dave what he did. And Dave was like, I make documentaries. And the guy said, for who? And Dave said, well, I mean, they're for everyone. And I knew that when he said, well, I mean, they're for everyone, like, I don't know. Like, I don't even know if this guy's name was Dave. But I knew this guy was totally legit, you know, was totally legit. And that I had been getting super fucked up and silently staring into the fire with some, like, genius filmmaker, you know. And I'm going to never know who this guy was. And that's, again, totally cool with me. This is what I'm saying. Just be yourself when you're networking. You don't have to be like, wait, tell me what movie you watched, made, blah, 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 you know, I'm trying to get somewhere in Hollywood. I mean, I just like enjoyed that I had gotten that smashed with with some random genius. I love getting smashed with random geniuses. You know, you never know what they're going to say. It's a really enjoyable experience. And so I hadn't talked. I mean, I didn't only sit by the fire, but I did mostly, you know, but I think that the more whatever the comedy elites were impressed and, you know, stoked that I had not tried to like insinuate myself into any conversation that I didn't need to be a part of, and that the people had done who'd done the drinking and smoking with me by the fire, not, you know, it seemed to have a good time. I established myself as a chill portion of this party, and then Kelly Carlin was like, I want to dance. And we went into this secondary house, which had the record collection that was mostly George Carlin's and Son of Kelly's. And we danced. We danced to soul music. And it was incredible. And I danced with Kelly Carlin, you know, daughter of one of my ultimate heroes and a brilliant individual in her own right. And while we were dancing, I was like, you know, I used to work at a ballet. And she, you know, gave me like a quizzical look, but the song that we danced to was Fight the Power, you know? I think it's James Brown, right? Fight the Power, is that B? Fight the Power. Yeah, Fight the Power by the Isley Brothers. I knew in that moment that that would be the theme of my time in LA, right? Like, you don't get to a point where you're dancing in the heart of comedy and not pay attention to what's happening, you know? And I felt like in that time, if I was going to impact comedy in California, that I would have to be a revolutionary, that there was no other way to go that I was not going to enter incremental change my way to the top, that, you know, I was going to fight the power.
You've been listening to The Dave Good Show.